We're up to Parshat Bo. Parshat Bo can be divided into three sections. Number one is the conclusion of the plagues. Number two is the mitzvos. And number three is the final plague of Bechoros, together with the commandments of Tefillin. Kadesh Lichol Bechor, the sanctification of the firstborn. And Vayakev Yachal, when Hashem brings us, that the firstborn animals will also be dedicated, which are the parshiot that are written in the Tefillin. So our parsha begins with Bo El Paro. You guys probably know the gematria. Bo is the first two letters of Bo are 3. The first two letters of Vayera are 7. Parshas Vayera has 7 plagues. Parshas Bo has 3 plagues. It's a famous gematria. I don't even know who said it. Hashem says, I've hardened his heart and the hearts of his servants because I want to make these signs so that you will be able to tell your children. And again, we see the stress on telling the children that this is a pivotal part of world history. It is not only about getting the world to know that Hashem is running the world, it's also about us recognizing it and us giving it over to our children. And that's why the night of the Seder, as we will see later in the parasha, is the night of giving over tradition. What we're telling the children is, this is a time that Hashem revealed himself and Hashem showed that he is involved, that he cares, that he is the creator, that he has a series of laws, he has actions which he promotes, actions which he despises, and he pays back the essence of Jewish faith. Hashem created, Hashem watches, Hashem cares, Hashem pays back, Hashem is involved, Hashem gives prophecy. The basic ideas of Judaism are all revealed within the story of Mitzrayim, and so we give that over to our children on the Seder night. And Hashem says, part of the idea of the 10 plagues is that you'll have what to tell over to your kids. It's not a one-minute ordeal, it's a year long. You'll tell them how I took care of Egypt, the miracles I did, and then you will know that I am the one who runs the world. Moshe and Aaron come to Paro and they say, till when are you refusing to send the people? Till when do you refuse to be humble before Hashem? And it's interesting, was this their job? To come and give Paro Musar, to give him rebuke? And I think that here we have the essence of all the service of Hashem. Every time we sin, it can be boiled down to that question. Till when do you refuse to be humble before your Creator? That's the question, because if we'd have humility, if we'd have a recognition, Shiviti Hashem Negdi Tamid, if I recognize that Hashem is really the one running the world, then where's there room to sin? So why don't I? Because I have a capital I, me, I want. So when I want, then I could forget Hashem. In Adam Chotela and Kenech Mesabu Ruach Shtut. Why is it a Ruach Shtut, explains the Drashot Aran? Because the nature of man is that he is logical. If you ask him, he'll tell you, I believe in God, I know what he wants of me, that's the type of life I want to lead. So then why'd you do an action that contradicts what you believe? Ah, Ruach Shtut. I felt like it, I want it. I. It's a Ruach Shtut. But if I really lived up to what I believe, so then I wouldn't be doing this. The Gra, I think, writes, we will still be fully ashamed when we have to view how our actions contradict our words. We say we believe, we daven like we believe, yet our actions are not reflective of that. And really, it all boils down to admatay me'anta le'anot mipanay. Till when is a person refusing to be humble before his Creator? If you refuse, Hashem says, tomorrow I am sending locusts, and the locust will destroy everything. Whatever was left from the hail will be destroyed by the locust. They'll come into your houses, and your servants, and everyone's. You've never seen a plague like this. And he leaves Paro, he doesn't wait for an answer. The servants tell Paro, till when is this going to destroy us, be our stumbling block? Send them. Let them worship Hashem, their God. Notice the Egyptians haven't accepted him. Don't you realize that Egypt's lost? And so he summons Moshe and Aaron and he tells them, go. Who's going? Moshe says, everyone's going. Men, women, children, cattle. It's our celebration before Hashem. And he says, no. You guys look out into the desert. There's a star called Ra'ah. That star is bloodshed. And if you guys go out there, not everyone will get killed. No, you want to let the men go. But there's no reason to send women and children out to that. So he chases them out. He has his man chase them out from before Paro. Now, the truth is, Paro had a point. We have a tradition that really there was a star called Ra'ah, evil, bad, out there in the desert. And that star was foretelling the destruction that was to come with the sin of the golden calf. And that's what Moshe says to Hashem. Lama yomeru Mitzrayim, if you destroy the Jewish people, as you are saying you should do, Well, then why let the Egyptians get away with saying, Bira'ah Hotziam? He took them out of Egypt under that star, Ra'ah. They warned us, there's a star called Ra'ah out there. If you destroy us, then they'll say, you see, we were right. You can't do that. So what does Hashem say? Fine, I'll let that blood be spilled when we do the mass circumcisions in 38 years when the Jews enter the land of Israel. We see here an interesting thing. The stars foretell of blood spilling. Hashem doesn't just say, baha with the stars. I say no, it's not going to happen. Hashem doesn't do that. Hashem says, if the heavens represent it, so then I'll let it play itself out in a positive way. And this teaches us a concept in the way Hashem runs the world. Hashem doesn't just make something out of nothing, and doesn't make all of nature change its course. Hashem takes what's there and makes it play itself out positively if we deserve it. The Gemara says if there's a decree that there'll be little rain this year, and then the people merit having excellent crops. So what does Hashem do? He doesn't make new rain come onto the scene. He just has it rain exactly where you need it. And if you get the rain exactly where you need it, then even a small amount of rain can develop a tremendous amount of produce. And the same can go the other way. So Hashem tells Moshe, extend your hand over Egypt and there'll be locust. So he extends his hand. And there's a wind all day and all night. And this shows us something about the Egyptians. Paro sees there's something unusual going on. There's a wind. Not for an hour, for a day. Not for a day and a night. And Moshe warned him, there's going to be a massive plague. And Paro doesn't budge. And the wind brings in the locust. Can you imagine? This is after six massive plagues. They get all this wind for a day and a night, and finally they see clouds coming. And the locusts are coming, and no, Paro doesn't give in. The Egyptians don't give in, and it's darkness. You have clouds of locusts landing and destroying everything. Nothing left. Paro rushes over to Moshe and Aaron and he says, this time I sinned to Hashem your God. I sinned against you here. I treated you not nice. I kicked you out. Please, this time, forgive me. Pray to Hashem your God. He should remove this death. Because what life can there be if they destroy everything? Moshe goes out, prays to Hashem. And a new strong wind comes and blows away all the locusts. Nothing left in Egypt. Hashem hardens Paro's heart, and he doesn't send them out. Remember, we had series. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Plague 1, 2 with a warning. Plague 3 without a warning. So now we're up to plague number 9. Darkness. No warning. Bam. Darkness. For 3 days, no one can budge. And the Jews have light. And Moshe tells the Jews, go look through the Egyptian stuff and see what jewelry they have. See what wealth they have. So that after the plague, you could ask them to borrow it. So if they could see it, why didn't they take it? What a kiddush Hashem. You know what happens in Manhattan when there's a blackout? So here there was 3 days blackout where God told the Jews, I'm on your side and you're going to have light. So when the blackout was done, after 3 days that the Egyptians couldn't do anything, the Egyptians went and checked. And they saw, all my wealth is here. So they said to themselves, I guess the Jews didn't know where I hid all my wealth. So what does Hashem do? Hashem tells the Jews, go ask the Egyptians to borrow their jewelry. So the Jew comes to the Egyptian and says, can I borrow your bracelets? And the Egyptian says, I don't have any bracelets. So the Jew says, gee, I know in that drawer over there you have this and this bracelet. So the Egyptian sits there and wonders, wait a second, he knew that. And when there was the plague of darkness, he could have taken that, and he didn't. So the Egyptian says, okay, fine. He lends him. And so the Jews borrow all the wealth from all the Egyptians. And the Egyptians now are really feeling bad because after 9 plagues, they sort of realize that Hashem is on the Jews' side. Now, another thing happened. You had 2 million Jews leaving Egypt at the end of our parsha. But in Makas Choshech, you had 8 million Jews dropped dead. Until this plague, the Egyptians suffered and the Jews were doing okay. And now comes the plague of darkness. The Egyptians have it dark, and the Jews have 8 million Jews dropped dead. What a number. 8 million, more than the Holocaust.
Just to be judged, right?
Right? Medrash says, in next week's parsha, it says, V'chamushim, Yatzuv Bnei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Chazal Darshan, Chamushim is like Chomesh, one-fifth. Chamushim could mean, one understanding is they went out with weapons, the other understanding is they went out as a fifth, meaning four-fifths died. Four out of five Jews didn't want to leave. Hashem gave them all this time to evolve. And one of the hardest things in life is to evolve. If you're brought up a slave and you keep thinking a slave, you don't want to leave. It's very comfortable being where you were at. To make a move in life is one of the hardest things. People stay in a miserable job for 20 years because they're scared of making a move. People stay in the same house for 20 years because they're scared of making a move. Same community. Part of life is move. Take the challenge. Yes, sometimes you'll fall and sometimes you'll succeed. But if you stay in the same place, you'll get nowhere. And that's very hard. And the older you get, the harder it gets. So Hashem gave us a year to evolve. And still, four out of five people were unprepared to leave Mitzrayim. Four out of five said, I want to stay here. And those four out of five dropped dead in the plague of darkness. So this is a very traumatic moment for the Jewish people. Meaning, until now, God keeps showing them, I'm on your side, I'm on your side, only the Egyptians are suffering. But they don't see God as a source of kindness. What do they see? That Hashem punishes. He hurts the Egyptians and hurts them again and hurts them again. They're coming off of 210 years of suffering. They have the stories of how Hashem saved Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. But at the end of the day, they've been suffering. And where's Hashem been all this time? Hashem doesn't answer that. So they know they have a tradition, there's been a covenant. The Brit Menabterim, Hashem said that it would take long before He'd take them out and give them the land of Israel. But what do they understand about Hashem? Very little. What they see is they've suffered, they've lost their children, and finally when Hashem comes to the scene, it's not out of compassion, they don't see warmth from Hashem, they just see how Hashem punishes the Egyptians. And so they're going through a whole year watching how Egypt is ravaged.
Scary,
right? And that's why in next week's parasha, the first thing Hashem's going to do after we cross the Yam Suf is Hashem's going to heal the waters. Hashem's going to tell them, Ani Hashem Rofecha, I'm Hashem your healer. Don't think that I only punish. I'm here to heal. I'm here to help. But right now they don't see that. And this really comes to a head with Makas Choshech, when what the Jewish people see is that four out of five Jews die too. So the Egyptians have suffered, and now the Jews die. So that's scary. And then Hashem tells them, go borrow things from the Egyptians. And the miracle happens, they succeed. And Hashem tells Moshe, there's going to be the plague of the firstborn, and the Jews will have a peaceful. You'll see that I've discerned between Jew and Egyptian. And Paro refuses, he chases Moshe out. And then we have the first mitzvah. Hashem tells the Jewish people, this is your responsibility now.
Where is that? What is the pasuk?
What they call the 12th chapter, the first pasuk. Hashem says, tell the people that they should take that very same sheep which they used to worship and prepare it for 4 days, and then they will slaughter it. So imagine what it took. Here they used to worship that.
Yeah.
And Hashem has been showing them for a whole year that everything about the Egyptians is worthless. Here the Egyptians said Pharaoh controls the world. He doesn't have any control. Here they said the Nile is a source of blessing. The Nile is turned to blood. The Egyptians claim they control the wild animals and who enters and who leaves. And here the wild animals enter at will. Their own animals drop dead. The sheep that they worship drop dead. Hashem shows them in the plagues that He controls the world. Even the Egyptian sorcerers at some point come and say, we can't anymore. That's it. This is God. God's running the show. We can't compete. And even so, finally the people are told, go take a sheep to slaughter. Now, on many levels, this is a difficult thing to do. Firstly, because they themselves worshipped the sheep until now. Secondly, because they were told to do it on Shabbos, meaning they had one day off from the Egyptians. There was one day a week that they had off, which was Shabbos. And Hashem tells them, on Shabbos, I want you to go fetch a good sheep and bring it home. Now, what happens? They come to fetch a sheep, they put a rope around its neck, and they start dragging it home. The Egyptian comes walking down the street, and he sees a Jew with a rope around his god's neck. He's not too happy. He turns to the Jew and says, what are you doing? So we have a tradition that the Jews said, well, God told me to take this and bring it home. And the Egyptian would be prepared to kill him. And then a miracle would happen. And he'd smile and say, well, you just have a nice day. But the Jews didn't know that would happen. When they went to pull the sheep home, they were risking their lives. They were risking their one day off. And this wasn't a simple thing. And that's why we commemorate that Shabbos. We call it Shabbat HaGadol, that great Shabbos, where the Jewish people went. They had to take the thing they worshipped until now and bring it home and leave it tied to their bed for 4 days. Now, if you believe that that sheep has powers, you don't want it tied to your bed for 4 days being prepared to be slaughtered. Keep it far away. I'll do a one-shot deal. No, Hashem says you slaughter it and you leave it whole and you roast it. If you believe it has powers, you want to slice it into pieces. Who knows what? No, Hashem says leave it whole. You got nothing to worry about. If you believe the Egyptians might come any day and be upset at you, you don't want a sheep tied to your bed for 4 days. Hashem shows them, I'm in control. They're not going to touch you. But this took great faith. This took a week of faith. The Jewish people have to grab that sheep publicly, bring it home and tie it to their beds, spend 4 days with that sheep in their home. Could you imagine what it means waking up every morning to looking at that sheep? I used to think it was God. Now God told me to tie it to my bed. So it's tied to my bed, licking my feet in the morning. So suddenly, they're brought to the realization, this sheep isn't everything I thought it was. Notice that when they're out in the desert, a few weeks into their period in the desert, they're again worshipping a golden calf. So all of this moved them forward, but we're still not 100%. So Hashem tells them, bring that sheep home, tie it, and slaughter it. Now you think, if you're going to slaughter the Egyptian god, you're going to do it quietly. What does Hashem say? Put the blood on the outer doorpost. You think, if I'm going to cook it, I'll cook it where no one will see. Hashem says, roast it. Everyone can smell it. Roast it whole. You can't even hide the evidence. You think at least we could get together, we'll have our own band, we'll protect ourselves. Hashem says, no, every Jew in his home. It's not an easy thing, and it was a very scary night for them. Because remember the previous plague, only Jews died. And in Makas Bechoros, they don't know what's going on around them. All they know is, I'm at home. I have a sign outside my door which says I slaughtered the Egyptian god. I put the blood outside my door. The Egyptians want to do a pogrom. They have an easy way to identify every Jew's home. I'm a sitting duck. I haven't gotten together with other Jews to protect myself. There's nothing I can do now. And come midnight, they hear wailing all over Egypt. And what do they know who's wailing? They don't know what's happening. And God says, don't leave your houses. So we're sitting ducks. And the only thing we can do is talk to Hashem. And so the Jews spent that night in fear, shivering at home, scared. What's going on? And corresponding to that fear and those prayers, our sages instituted that in the nighttime Arvit, we say, Hashkiveinu Hashem Elokeinu L'Shalom. Just as the Jews prayed to go in peace, so do we every night pray to Hashem, let us go to sleep in peace. Our first mitzvah as a people is the mitzvah of time. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. The mitzvah of controlling time. He who controls time controls the people. One of the ways that the Egyptians controlled the people was that they held on to the calendar. The Egyptian priests would claim that they had godly powers because they controlled the calendar and they knew how to forecast when the Nile would rise. So they made believe that they controlled when the Nile would rise. What does Hashem do? Our first mitzvah is about time. Hashem says, this is your month. And you will always count from this month because you will commemorate how on this month you became free. So we call it the first month, the second month, the third month. It's all a commemoration of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Just like we don't call the days of the week Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. We call them Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, always corresponding to Shabbat. Every day of the week we remember that this is day one from Shabbat, day two from Shabbat. We're commemorating Shabbat, which the Ramban says is a biblical mitzvah. By the same token, we're commemorating Yetzias Mitzrayim when we call it in month 1, 2, 3, and 4. The Torah gives us a mitzvah to eat the Korban Pesach roasted for generations. We have to eat it all that night, not leave anything over. And we have over here a lava nitak lase. There are certain prohibitions that are standalones. Then you have prohibitions that are connected to a proactive commandment. Don't leave any over till the morning. That's a lav. If anything's left over, then burn it. That's an ase. Lava nitak lase. That prohibition is connected with an ase to fix it. How do we eat it? We're all girdled, ready to leave. And Hashem says, I will pass through Egypt and I will kill the Egyptian firstborns, the animals' firstborns, and the gods of Egypt. So what's going to happen on this night? The Egyptian gods are going to be destroyed. What's the first Egyptian god to be destroyed on Pesach?
What's the first Egyptian god to be destroyed?
Right.
The sheep.
The sheep. So here we see a theme that repeats itself throughout Torah. Hashem says, I'll do, but you do first. Right? Hashem tells Noach, you build the ark, I'll bring the flood. You start, I'll continue. Same thing with Moshe Rabbeinu in the building of the Mishkan. Hashem says, you slaughter the sheep, I'll finish off the rest of the Egyptian gods. One of the Egyptian gods were the firstborn. Because otherwise you have to ask yourself, Hashem says, I'm going to punish the Egyptians, and I will leap over, I will pass over your homes. That's a funny thing to say. The Egyptians deserve to be punished. We don't deserve to be punished. Why does Hashem have to pass over our homes? So the Talmud tells us that the Jews in Egypt were idol worshippers just like the Egyptians. And it says in the Jerusalem Talmud that the Egyptians worshipped the firstborns. The Bechoros and Mitzrayim were one of the Avodah Zarah. So Hashem says, I will destroy the Egyptian gods. I will destroy the Egyptian firstborn. What about the angels? Why does Hashem have to do it personally? Because the angels in heaven are saying, God, why are you punishing the Egyptians and not the Jews? What's the difference between them? The Jewish firstborn are also idols. The Jews also worship their firstborn children. Why don't you kill them too? To which Hashem says, Banai him. Chazal tell us that on the... What? Banai him. The Medrash says that on the night of Makas Bechoros, what was Hashem saying as he passed through Egypt, passing over our homes? A heavenly voice came out and said, Banayim, they're my children. That's the heavenly voice that was coming out as Hashem did Makas Bechoros. Meaning, you ask a person, what's so special about your kid? Come on, look at all the other kids. What's special about your kid? What does the person say? What do you mean? He's my kid. He's my kid. And if he's my kid, then that's special enough. It's not a question of logic. Why do people love their kids? They know other kids are cuter. But he's my boy. Hashem says, the angels say, why them and not them? Hashem says, they're my kids. There are twice in Yetzias Mitzrayim this happens. Once with Makas Bechoros, and once with Kriyas Yamsuf, where the angels say, why are they sinking and them swimming? Why are they passing in dry land and they're sinking? They're both sinners. It's not like we had so many merits to our name. Hashem says, they're my kids. What do we say every day in Shacharis? Malchutecha, Ra'u, Banecha. In Yetzias Mitzrayim, we were on the level of Banim. And that's why on Pesach night, we say Hallel. The Gemara tells us you don't say Hallel at night. What are you doing saying Hallel the night of Pesach? Because it's a song, it's not a Hallel. Hallel is praise that's sung by a servant. On the night of Pesach, we're children. We're Hashem's children. We're not servants. There are different levels of connection between Am Yisrael and Hashem. There's a level where sometimes we're a servant. We say it on Yom Kippur, right? We say, Im Kivanim, Im Kavadim. We say, Hashem, whether you treat us like servants, whether you treat us like children. Im kivanim rachamenu kachem aval banim. If we're your children, so we expect mercy, like a father has mercy for his children. And if we're not on that level, v'im kavadim, and if we're only servants, so then einenu lechat teluyot, we lift our eyes to you because a servant has no hope. He looks to the master, help me out. So however you view us, help us out. We say it on Yom Kippur. But that shows us there are two levels of connection between us and Hashem. And on Metzias Mitzrayim, it was the level of banim, banayim. The Jews have a mass circumcision. You guys know what it means to have a circumcision? Let me tell you what it means to have a circumcision. 7 years ago, we had a student here who did gear and needed to be circumcised. And I came to visit him after a circumcision. He was lying in bed in pain. And if you want to understand the pain, he needed to shower. So that morning, the first morning after the circumcision, he crawled out of bed to the shower. And the doctors told him to change the bandages in the shower. So he started changing the bandages and fainted from pain in the shower. You remember this, Daniel? This wasn't your time. He fainted from pain. So this was no easy thing. Hashem says, circumcise. And that's what we say at every bris. We quote the pasuk in Yechezkel. Ve'evor alayich ve'erech mitboseset b'damayich. Va'omar lach b'damayich hayi. Va'omar lach b'damayich hayi. Hashem says, because of your blood you shall live. Because of your blood you shall live. And Chazal say that when they took the blood for putting the blood on the doorpost, they were still bleeding from their circumcisions. It hadn't healed. And the two bloods mixed as they dipped the blood in the, as they dipped the grass in the blood of the animal, their own blood was dripping into there. They hadn't healed. And both bloods were mixed as they put them on the doorpost. That's a pretty scary state to go out into a desert. Scary state to be at the peril of the Egyptians. Yeah, Yohanan.
I thought that pastor referred to the Jew onto Daven before he started. You shall live of your blood, and that means that you have to daven first to Hashem.
We say that from the pasuk Lo tochelu al adam, Lo tochelu kodem shetitpalu al dimchem.
Maybe I'm confused with someone else,
which
refers to Dam.
Yes, I'm saying the Gemara does darshan the pasuk lo tochelu al adam. That the Gemara darshans, you shouldn't eat before you pray over your blood, over your life.
Fine, I think that's what I mean.
Yes, so that's a different pasuk.
Okay.
So we have a mitzvah on Pesach to eat matzah and not to eat chametz. And again, matzah shows the control over time. One of the first messages that we're given is this idea of control of time. Because it's a new concept to a slave. One thing that a slave does not have is control over his own time. We discussed 2 weeks ago the two definitions the Talmud tells us of avodas parech. One definition is just work. You keep digging, I'll tell you when to stop. And then the master leaves. That's called avodas parech, because he's mocking the value of the servant's time. He's saying, you keep working, and I'll come back at some point, and I'll tell you to stop. What's the other definition? He tells the servant to dig a pit, and when he's done, he tells him, okay, now take all that dirt and refill the pit. What did he do? Again, he mocked the servant's time. And we have a prohibition not to make our servants do avodas parech. From there, we have a definition. What were the Egyptians doing to us? Showing us that our time was valueless. What is the Torah telling us with the very first mitzvot? Your time matters. Every minute matters. You will control time. HaChodesh hazeh lachem. You're responsible for taking control of the times. You have a mitzvah of matzah. It's about controlling time. You have to make that matzah under a certain time constraint. Ushmaltem et hamatzot. Now we know we have to watch every mitzvah. So what does it mean when the Torah tells us about a mitzvah, watch this mitzvah? So one understanding is, and we apply this halachically, that you have to be extra careful with the matzah. And that's why we buy shmura matzah. Matzah that was watched You watch that grain from the time you harvested it. You watch that grain from the time you ground it into flour. Shmura matzah. It's being watched extra. The other understanding is you have to watch it for the sake of matzah. And that's also our shmura matzah. We always say, like the Rush writes, l'shem matzos mitzvah, right? We'll go to a matzah bakery mitzvah and we'll see how... When do you want to go? We usually go a little bit later in the year. But if you guys want to go, we could go. You want to go tomorrow? I think it's a waste to do tomorrow, but maybe next week. If you want to go, we could try to arrange it for next week. We usually go closer to Pesach, but we could go now. They're already baking. Okay. So they keep saying, we're doing this for the sake of the mitzvah. You should watch it for the sake of the mitzvah of matzah. Now we have a biblical mitzvah to eat matzah on the first night of Pesach. And it's very interesting that with this mitzvah, the Torah tells us, be it you, be it your ger. We haven't yet left Egypt, and the Torah is talking about gerim. The Torah automatically allows people to join. And that's why if people say we're racist, that's a ridiculous claim. Because we allow anyone to join. If an Arab wants to join, anyone who wants could join Judaism. Moshe calls the elders and he gives them this commandment and warns them that they all have to stay indoors. And this teaches us another concept. Kivan shenitna reshut lamashchit, shuv eino mavchin ben tzadik lerasha. Hashem says, once there's harm out there, you can't assume you're going to be spared just because you're a pious person. You stay indoors, Hashem says. There's some virus in the air. People are going to be dropping like flies. You have to be in your homes. And this is a concept that's reiterated throughout the Tanakh. I was talking to a bus driver who was driving a route that the last month, almost every night, Arabs threw rocks and bashed the windshield of the bus. So I asked him, aren't you concerned? I asked him first if his bus was rock-proof. He said, no. I said, so aren't you worried? So he said to me, no. If I'm supposed to die, I'll die. Doesn't matter where I am. If I'm supposed to live, I'll live. Doesn't matter where I am. And that's ridiculous. That's not the Torah's approach. The Torah says, stay away from harm. If you're supposed to live, you'll live. If you stay out of harm's way, you jump off the Empire State Building, you're not going to live. God might say, I had another 70 beautiful years in store for you. You killed it. Excuse the pun. So Hashem says, you know, it's up to you. You choose to travel down a path where you know they're throwing rocks at you. You might live, you might not. It's up to you to be careful. Hashem starts talking to us about chinuch. Notice we're still in Egypt. And Hashem says, your children are going to ask you what you're doing. And this is another beautiful thing the Torah shows us. You're just starting out as Jewish people. Look at the chinuch. Look at the education of your kids. Your kids are going to ask, what are you doing? You're going to tell them, this is a paschal offering. Hashem passed over our homes. If you pause, you will see that this is a recurring theme throughout the Tanakh. What's the book of Eicha? That's probably the most extreme example. We're weeping over the destruction of Jerusalem. How could this beautiful city be sitting in ruins? When was Eicha written? Decades before the destruction.
What?
Decades before the destruction. The book of Eicha was written by the Navi Yirmiyahu and handed to a Judean king, telling him this is what's yet to come. All of Eicha.
Really?
The description, it hasn't yet happened. But we're looking back, this is what's happened. We haven't yet left Egypt, and Hashem says, what are you going to tell your kids? We haven't yet entered the land of Israel, but in the song of Oz Yashir, what do we say? Ad Yavoram Hashem, Ad Yavoram Zukanita. We already have the prophecy that there are going to be two comings. That the first coming into the land of Israel will not be eternal. There's going to be destruction, the temple will be destroyed, the land will be destroyed. They just crossed the Yom Suf, next week's parasha. And they're already prophesizing that they're going to be entering and leaving and entering. There are going to be ups, there are going to be downs. And based on that, Joshua has to sanctify the land of Israel and David and Shlomo, the Temple Mount. And there's a whole discussion, being that everyone already knew that it wouldn't be eternal. So what level of sanctification did they give Eretz Yisrael in the Temple Mount? Kichal Shatav, Kichal Atid Levo. Did they also sanctify it in spite of the destruction that was coming? Well, who told them there'd be destruction? Hashem told them when they left Mitzrayim. They haven't even gotten the Torah yet, and they already see the future. Am Yisrael are a people of the future. They're people who live the present and can also look to the future. We are not bound by the moment. Gezerah avida debatla. The Gemara tells us that if the enemies make a decree against us, we don't change our lives too much because of a decree. Because we say, their decree will pass and we won't. We are eternal. Judaism is eternal. And that's why when Judaism views things, Judaism looks at things in the span of eternity. When you're looking in the span of eternity, so then you don't get disheveled by things that happen because you see them as passing things. Zera avida debatla. They will pass and we won't. A point to ponder. Chazal instituted Shmona Esrei for generations. And then they added a blessing in Shmona Esrei for generations. That means Chazal realized that the movement that was threatening us at the time, the movement that was still in its diapers, they realized then that that would be a continuous challenge till Mashiach comes. Because when they changed the Shmona Esrei and they added a bracha of Elamalshinim, they added it for generations to come. They added it with a perspective of eternity. Something to think about. So midnight comes. And everyone's dropping like flies. There's a machlokes whether they were told exactly which midnight would be the plague. Meaning, why was Paro lying in bed? Was he so stupid? Was he so stubborn? How come he's in bed? He knows he's a firstborn. And everyone's crying in Egypt. Every house has someone dropped dead. And here Chazal tell us, because everyone was cheating on everyone's wives, no one knew who was whose wife, people were all over. So you thought it was your second child. You don't realize it was the neighbor's first child from your wife. It wasn't even your first child. So people are dying and no one understands who's dying and why. And that's why Egypt goes into panic mode. Now, according to the understanding that they knew that that night would be the plague of the firstborn, so then Chazal tell us, why was this plague called Makat Bechorot, the plague of the firstborn? So the simple understanding is, because that's it, this is the plague. The deeper understanding we'll get to in a minute. Yes?
Is the firstborn going to the woman or the father's?
That's an excellent question, which has halachic ramifications. Because we fast on the eve of Pesach. And we fast because the firstborn were killed. So our firstborn fast. And so there's a discussion in halacha, do women also fast? The women firstborn, meaning the girls. So technically there are sources that say they should, but the custom seems to be that they don't. That the first... Right? Seems like it went lechumra. All whoever could be called the firstborn was dying. That's what the Medrash seems to say. But Chazal tell us that there was a mass rebellion on the eve of Pesach. The firstborn said, why should we die? Let the Jews go. And Paro sent out his men, and you had a civil war going on in Egypt there of Pesach. Chazal say that the Bechoros wanted us to go free. Paro comes running in the middle of the night. He's scared he's going to die. And he says, get out. Chazal tell us, Paro was running around in his pajamas looking for Moshe, and the Jews would look out the window and tell him, down that way, and he'd keep going back and forth looking for Moshe. But at any rate, at some point he finds Moshe and Aaron, and he says, get out of my nation. You, the Jewish people, go serve Hashem like you said. Take the cattle. Just pray for me. I shouldn't die. Paro is a big Baal Tshuva, but not yet. He still has one more hurdle to cross. So the Egyptians come and they start banging on the Jews' door saying, leave. And the Jews say, we're not leaving till Moshe tells us. But the Egyptians were panicked because they thought they were all going to die. They didn't see a method to this. But Moshe said the firstborn, and here they're seeing kids dying left and right. So the morning comes. Hashem tells Moshe, I want the Jews to leave in the morning so that no one can say they snuck out like thieves. It has to be clear, I won. That the Egyptians said leave. And so when morning comes, each one takes their dough and they go out with all the loot that they borrowed from the Egyptians. And Egypt is left without vegetation, without food, without wealth. Egypt is now empty. Am Yisrael travels. We have 600,000 men. Figure you have approximately 600,000 women. You have a bunch of children. So you have approximately 2 million people. And you have Erev Rav. You have a lot of people from Egyptians who wanted to join. And they bake their dough as matzah. And here we see an interesting thing. They were told to eat matzah before they left Mitzrayim. We eat matzah to commemorate the fact that they were rushed out of Mitzrayim and they couldn't bake their bread normally. They had to do it quickly because the Egyptians were rushing them out of Egypt. But then why did they eat matzah the night before they left Mitzrayim? So here the commentaries say there are two types of matzah. All the years they were in Egypt, they ate matzah because they were slaves. And matzah, no one ever gave them the time of day to make normal bread. And matzah constipates a person. You can't eat too much crackers. So that would keep them good workers. They wouldn't have to go out too much. They wouldn't have to take too much time baking the bread. So the Egyptians forced them to eat matzah. And so there's a matzah that commemorates the slavery. And that's the lechem oni. And that's the matzah we break like poor man's bread. And we eat it to commemorate that. Then there's a matzah that we bring out at the end that commemorates the great redemption. That look, they left Mitzrayim in such haste that they couldn't bake normal bread. So the matzah reflects two aspects of the exile. We have a mitzvah that from the Paschal offering, only Jews may eat. And a person must be circumcised as his slave must be circumcised. Everyone in the family has to be circumcised. When you eat the Paschal offering, you have to show you're a free man. You're not allowed to break a bone. And here there's an interesting halacha that it says a group of geirim can't eat their own Paschal offering. Why? Because gerim are very diligent in keeping mitzvos. They're so careful that they might end up breaking a bone. That shows us that there's something to say about that. Notice again how the Torah shows concern and equality. Torah says you treat them like an equal. Everyone's the same. We leave Mitzrayim, and Hashem gives us the mitzvah of tefillin. What goes into our tefillin? So we have two tefillin. We have the tefillin on our head, which is really four compartments made of one hide. It goes like a W, right? The compartments fold in and out and in and out. And then we have tefillin on the arm, which is really one box. The tefillin on the head have four parshios, Kadesh Li Kol Bechol, Vayaki V'yacha, the two parshios in our parsha, and Shman V'hoyem Shemoa. Those four parshios are in the tefillin on the head, each one written on its own piece of parchment. And on the tefillin on the arm, you have all four parshiyot written on one piece of parchment. Kadesh li chol bechol. The mitzvah is that the firstborn, the first one that comes out of the womb, be it a human, be it an animal, is sanctified to Hashem. And Moshe tells the Jewish people, when you come to the land of Israel, so then you will do this service on this day, 7 days eating matzos, no chametz, and you'll tell your children, because of this Hashem did for me and took me out of Mitzrayim. And you'll commemorate it by wearing something on your arm and your head. And this will leman tiyeh torat Hashem b'ficha, ki biyad chazaka utziyacha Hashem mimitzrayim. So that you will commemorate, you will have Hashem's Torah, to remember Hashem took you out of Egypt with a strong hand. What does it mean, so that? We have a few mitzvos in the Torah where the Torah gives us a reason. Sit in Sukkos so that you remember I took you out in Sukkos. I took you out of Mitzrayim and sat you in Sukkos. So we have a klal that the Bach tells us, the commentary on the tour, Rav Yol Sirkis, a street here named after him, he said that whenever the Torah says lema'an, when the Torah tells you mitzvah, and then tells you the reason is so that you remember this, that, or the other thing, it means that if you don't remember that reason when you do the mitzvah, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah. So when we put on tefillin every morning, we have to have in mind, and it's printed in the Sidurim, there's a special prayer you says that actually expresses this. You say, I'm putting on tefillin to commemorate that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim with an outstretched hand, to remember that Hashem, that's Ki b'yad chazaka hotzeiach mimitzrayim, to remember that Hashem controls everything, and to subdue my desires and my thoughts to Him. And that's reflected in these parshiyot. Hashem says, your children will ask you. Three times already we saw, our children will ask us, and Chazal say, there's a fourth time later on, that reflects the four types of children a person might have, what we say, the arba banim on the Seder night. And the final parsha that goes in the tefillin is that when we come to the land of Israel, the firstborn animals are dedicated to Hashem. The firstborn donkey has to be redeemed with a sheep. Mitzrayim are called the animal of a donkey. A donkey in Hebrew is chamor. Chamor comes from the word chomer. Chomer is like the physical. They were the most physical nation, the most decrepit nation when it comes to their morals. And we are reflected by the sheep. We are the sheep that came instead of the donkey. So that's why the donkey is redeemed by the sheep. And we have to redeem our firstborn sons. Those of you that are firstborn, check out if your parents did. Pidyon Ben, you're supposed to redeem your firstborn sons. Your children ask you what this is all about. You say it's because Hashem took us out with an outstretched hand and the Egyptians were killed. They're animals and people, and that's why we sacrifice our firstborn and redeem our firstborn children. And that's what it says, that a child that was not redeemed, that did not have Pidyon HaBen, is considered in Sakana. We redeem him, so to speak, from death, where we say, I recognize that the firstborn were killed, and Hashem saved our firstborn. So we're redeeming him from the death, that really that's the whole idea of passing over, as we explained earlier from the Jerusalem Talmud, that Hashem passed over our house. Our houses deserved it as much as theirs did. That's the great redemption. And we reflect that in our redeeming of the firstborn. Yes? So we pass in La Halacha, the Prima Gadim writes in Shulchan Aruch, that even though Lechatchila, ideally, one should have this Kavanah, but B'di'eved, one has fulfilled his mitzvah even if he did not have this Kavanah. And you see, most people have no clue about this Kavanah, and even so, the fact that they have in mind to do biblical mitzvah, that's enough.